Hey there, and welcome into another episode of the Subscription Web Design Podcast. I'm here with my new friend, Ezra McCarthy. Ezra, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good.
Amazing. So Ezra is a fellow subscription web design agency owner. We've had conversations a few different times now across different places, different corners of the internet, and thought it would be good to have Ezra on the podcast to share a little bit about his story. He's doing really well with his business. And so it's always good because I do deal with a lot of beginners, a lot of people who are just wanting to get into this and seeing the power of the subscription model. So I have fewer conversations with people who have already done it and made it successful. And so I'm really pumped about this. And I think there's going to be a lot for you all to learn. So give us the background, man. How did you get into this? Where did it all start? And who are you anyway?
Sure. So it kind of started back. I had started on our first round a little earlier, but I'll just jump right ahead. I had a painting company. And then how we got to where we are today is I started a lawn care company after the painting company. And with that, I used the lessons that I had learned from the previous business. So I started, got that website up. I started gathering reviews from my customers. And as you probably know, reviews are so important, especially on what's called the Google Business Profile. And what I found is the more reviews I got, the less I had to sell to customers, and also the more they came to me rather than me going to them. And as I looked around more specifically in the lawn care industry, I realized even large, literally million-dollar lawn care companies were not using these tools effectively, website, Google Business Profile, online marketing. And so I saw that there was a huge gap in the marketplace. And so I had done a little bit of web design at that point. And so we started helping people with the combination of the two. And that has brought us to where we are today.
Yeah, I've definitely found the same thing. Isn't it funny how, because I had a conversation, gosh, it's been probably a month ago, with a landscaping company in our area. Same deal, right? I mean, they're doing probably $2 million top line revenue per year. And our conversation was like, yeah, the guy doesn't really like to ask for reviews, right? So he doesn't get reviews very often. The reviews they do have are good, but he never asks for them. His contact form on his website doesn't actually, and we didn't build the website. That's why I was talking to him. The contact form on the website, you know, doesn't even send half the requests to him. So,
oh no,
you know, missing out on business there. And, but you know, some people just kind of get comfortable, right? And go from there. So there's all these little opportunities, right? It's nothing huge, right? But there's all these little opportunities that you can do. And if you just get all those ducks in a row, it's amazing how fast a business can grow.
And I would disagree that it's a huge opportunity. And here's why. I helped a guy in 2022, he did $30,000. He was a landscape company there. And the next year he did $200,000 in revenue. And guess how old he is?
Wow.
17.
Whoa.
In high school. I mean, yeah. And that's a crazy story, true, but crazy. But there's a huge opportunity because even just like I ask all my customers this, Steve, do you shop on Amazon?
Yeah, of course.
And I'm like, okay, if there's no reviews, do you buy it?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. And this is how online buying is now. People look at Google reviews. And a lot of times, if you don't ask, pardon me, the only people that are going to leave one are those that are angry or that had a bad experience. Unfortunately, sometimes things fall through the cracks. And so asking your customers for one is such a good method. And that's kind of when I first got into helping people with marketing, I was trying to help them with their Google Business Profile then, now Google, or Google My Business, now Google Business Profile.
Yeah.
The name change. But what I found is I'd have to educate them on the value before I could sell them on the service. And so that's when I moved in helping them with their website and then adding on to that. And that seemed to be a better selling point to help them.
Oh, really? Interesting. So, because I know some people who are going in with the reviews because that's such an obvious question, right? Like the question you asked, and then upselling to a website. So you actually found that in the industries you were working with, you found it was easier to get in the door with a website and then upsell to the reviews?
Well, I don't even upsell, really. I more just have that in part of my package. But because the problem was, at least in the lawn landscape industry, people understand the value of a quality website. And even though a Google Business Profile and making sure it's optimized, have the reviews, is, I would say, as valuable or on par, they don't value it the same. So to sell that service, it's going to be a hard sell and it's not going to work well. So I include that in because, like I tell people, just because you have a website up, there's millions and millions of websites. You could have the best billboard or website in the world in the middle of the woods and no one's going to see it. And that's not original to me, but I thought it was really good, the billboard part. And so I tell people, like, okay, you've got to drive people there. And last time I looked up recently, 90% of people are searching on Google. So people are all about posting on these random places. And I'm like, people aren't on social media and I'm not into that personally, but they're not on there. They're looking at dumb cat memes. They're not
That's right.
searching for a product or service. So you know what? I tell people, if you can get on Google and be number one in the local map pack, be up there with your website, I'm sure all of us, if we got 9/10 of the traffic, would be just fine.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I completely agree. People are always looking for, the hack. Here's what people aren't doing for some reason. People aren't I literally had this thought, I think it was yesterday or maybe even this morning. It all runs together. I thought, I bet a company would be really successful if they just focused on what was working 50 years ago. And what I mean by that is, there's all these what's working now kind of ideas, right? And the problem is if you're researching what's working now, that means that whatever they're talking about has already been working so long that it's becoming less effective in the public consciousness. So what you have to do is look at behavior. You have to look at how people act. And here's the thing. People are, well, one way Jeff Bezos ironically actually said this from Amazon is that you got to focus on what doesn't change, right? He's like, my customers are always going to want cheaper prices and faster shipping. And so literally for 20 years, that is all Amazon has optimized for essentially is cheaper prices and faster shipping. And so when you look at a business, any service-based business, which a landscaping company is, of course, a home services business, but of course, website design like we do is also a service business. It falls into that same category. People are always going to ask their friends first and check out what other people have had to say first before interacting with that kind of business. It just so happens that thanks to the technology like Google reviews, that has become a lot more ubiquitous and easier to do now, but it's always been that way. You always go to your personal network. And so shoring up those foundations of your personal network seems like a much better way to actually get clients in this sort of environment, than all these little hacks. Now, let me ask you a question, I want your feedback on this. Did you find that for you in terms of getting web design business, it's been the same, or how has that process looked for you? Do you get clients for your business the same way that you get your clients' customers for their business, or is it different?
It's totally different. So for my model, I do my best to sell one to many. And so what I do, well, I'm not on here to sell anything, but I try to do a lot of podcasts with people that serve the landscape industry. And so there's a lot of podcasts in the landscape industry. I'll go on there and I'll just talk about, first of all, how it helped my business. I went from zero to $6,000 in my landscape business in 4 months with zero paid ads. Now, that's not a $1 million business, but that's a good start. And most people in the landscape industry, it's about, they struggle with, okay, there's a lot of competition. They call it chucking the trucks. It doesn't take much to start a lawn care business, throw a mower in the back of your truck or your car, and just lower your price and you're going to get customers. Now, you can't build a business that way, but there's a lot of kids, people doing it. So how do you stand out? So I sell one to many, and that's been very effective so far. When I first started, I tried cold calling, and I was doing 100 calls a day. It was this talk about suck your soul out. It's just terrible. And out of those, I got two customers. One was great, and he's still with me. And he was literally my fifth or 10th call. And then hundreds of calls later, I only had like one. And so, for my business, what I found is picking a niche that I know, because if I went and tried to sell, there's a few things that I know well enough. I could sell to roofers. I roofed for 5 years in college, probably sell for painters at a painting company, at a lawn care company. I could sell to those because I can speak their language. I can talk about that customer who wants, you know, the things that they need. I could talk that language. And so picking something that you know, and so you can talk to them in ways that they understand, are ways to effectively basically build rapport with your future clients.
Ezra, I'm already loving this conversation, and I'll tell you why. Because you are literally validating so much of what I have been saying for a long time on this podcast. There's almost too much to go through. So let me just hit a couple high points here, and then you may have some additional color that you want to add, or maybe not. All right, so here's one thing I say all the time: attraction, not chasing. Clients do not want to be chased. Right? We are just not in that era anymore. Nobody wants you to show up at their door. You know, if you're in the landscaping industry, right? Nobody really wants you to show up at their door even and say, "Hey, I mowed the house a couple, houses over. Like, do you need help with your landscaping?" I'm like, "No, I want to go back inside and eat dinner with my family. It's 6 o'clock. Why are you here?" Right? Nobody wants to be cold called while they're in the truck on the way to a job or having a tough conversation with an employee or something like that, to talk about their website services. And so that's where you're
Right.
going to have, and cold sales has always been a numbers game. I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, you know, 100 calls and then maybe get one client, you know, that's just about par for the course, right? Which is why I don't do it. But it leaves a bad taste in the mouth of every single person that you actually do get to talk to, assuming you actually get to talk to them. I understand you got to do what you got to do. But in your situation, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, listen, I know this industry well, which that's the next thing I was going to say. So I'll just go there. When you build a business in web design based on something that you know already, an industry or something that you are coming from, you have an advantage over every other web designer that they could ever engage because you know their language. You can speak to them about the things that matter to them in a way that other businesses could only ever hope to. And when you put those two things together, attraction, the idea of attracting people to you instead of chasing them, and then knowledge in a particular space, what that leads to is influence. And so now you have the ability to do what Ezra's talking about. You can go on their podcasts. I would even argue, and I don't know that you've gone this far, but I would even argue that you could hold industry-specific webinars. You could host your own podcast where you were interviewing other successful landscaping companies. There are lots of angles that you could do when you become the guy who's the expert in website design and digital marketing for landscaping companies, for example, right? It's not just a matter of having a good cold outreach program or even warm outreach program. It's that you can leverage influence and do the one-to-many selling. And where I would add one more thing to that and say that, well, there's still probably an opportunity here for you to get, and you'll have to tell me if this is true for you, if you get lots of business through referrals or any of that. But with a structured offer like this, which I'd love to know more about your actual web design offer that you put together as well, but with a sort of structured offer like yours, subscription-based web design, I'm guessing it's a managed service model of some sort. I think there's lots of opportunity there for referral incentives and programs like that where you could actually build the word of mouth thing and get online reviews that actually end up helping your web design business and everything. So there's just a lot of layers there, but it all comes back to choosing who's the perfect who for you. Right. Who's the who that you want to work with and that you know you could work with? And then you can leverage sales opportunities like one to many, like Ezra's talking about, that you would just never be able to do otherwise. So, I mean, does that kind of make sense to you?
For sure. And also, when on that niching down, when you get really specific, then you can adjust the copy on your website to that. I was just telling someone the other day, if a realtor came to my website, they would just bounce very quickly because they could see clearly this isn't for me, but I'm not for them. I don't want to build a realtor website. I don't want a e-commerce site. I just don't want that. And if they got on my website, they would leave very quickly. Not because it doesn't look good, hopefully, but just because they could see this is not built for me. But the power
Right.
that does give is as soon as my target audience lands there, they can see this is for me. And I literally, in my sales call, I tell people, well, I'll give you an example. There was a lawn care company in Adrian, Michigan, and I was looking on their website and I thought that they did lawn mowing. Well, after 10 minutes on the call, I was talking to him and I said, and he told me, I don't do lawn mowing. All I do is lawn care fertilization. And you say, why does that matter? That's a little nuanced, but that matters because he doesn't want lawn care cutting customers. He's not trying to get them, but the person who designed it didn't know the nuance. So I'm able to know the nuance, and honestly can sell them and say, hey, I've been in the industry. I know the nuance. I can craft the copy. I can help you so the right customers come and you increase sales just through that.
Yeah, that's man, that is such a huge point, because if you think about the amount of research that you would have to do even before a sales call on a customer to know that that was even the kind of question that you could ask, right? Versus already having in your mind, you know, the sorts of questions that you need to ask. The same was true. And by the way, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage, although I did used to work for a landscaping company. Okay. So I worked for a landscaping company for probably about 2 years. I was really bad at it. Okay. But it was my best friend's dad in high school. And you know, I did it because he was offering money. Well, at least when the checks didn't bounce, but that's another story for another day. Anyway, when the checks didn't bounce, there was a little bit of money in the landscaping job that I did. So when I was talking to this company a couple months ago now, you know, they were like, they're not even interested in selling their lawn mowing services. Like, they've already got enough clients for that, right? They want to do lighting and irrigation installations, right? Even though they're a landscaping company. And it's to the point where they had to have a whole separate website built, you know, just for that. So there is industry specific nuance that you're going to have when you work on something. And let me just go there. I have another question I want to ask you about the podcasting, but since we're on this, let me go there. When it comes to like actually picking a niche that you're going to work with, like, okay, you chose landscaping. That was something that you did. That was something that you knew. Do you have any specific advice for how someone can find what the niche is for them that might make sense, and what kind of guardrails to, you know, to look at?
Well, I would say, okay, have you worked in a job? So like if you've done landscaping or if you've done painting, or I think you've talked about, I've listened to some of your podcasts that used to do recording. And maybe if someone said, oh, I've done recording, maybe I could target recording studios. And then once you have that, look and see, okay, what is the total addressable market? If there's only 500 in the US, it's possible that you're going to be able to get maybe 10% of the market, but if you can get a decent sized market, then you're gonna have a better luck. And even if you don't know one, but say, okay, I think I could enjoy working with this type of people, then learn and just focus down on that. You don't necessarily have to have had work there.
Yeah. And let me ask you, do you think that you need to have passion?
You know, this is something that I've thought a lot about
I'm
because
sure.
I've struggled with this before. Like there's probably only one job, and I won't tell you which it is, that I've enjoyed ever doing. Like literally, I've told my wife, I said, oh, but you know what? And actually I like to listen to Alex Hormozi, and he talks about, you know, you're never going to have a passion about something when you're starting, you're terrible at it. But when you get better at it, that's going to help. And I thought that was so true, you know. And Seth Godin had something really good in one of his books that he talked about. He said, you know, it's a lot harder to go search out your passion than just choose to be passionate about where you are. You know, you can work in a hotel and get passionate about serving the guests. You can work in a restaurant and say, I want to serve these people so well that I'm going to change their day. You can be passionate about web design and say, hey, I want to help someone. Pardon me, go from 30,000K to 200K in a year at 17 years old. I want to completely change their life. And so, you know what? That even if after a year or two they go somewhere else, they're never going to forget me.
Exactly. Yeah. That is such a good point, because we think about passion as something that it's like it already has to be there, but that's not how like how life works, Right? I
Right.
mean, the way that life works is you develop a passion, usually through the pursuit of mastery. I mean, I think there's a spark. I mean, I knew the first time I walked into a recording studio, I was like, okay, I'm deciding right now that there is going to be some context and some way in which I do this for the rest of my life, right? That was just a spark, though. I couldn't be like passionate about it because I didn't know anything about it. I had a lot to learn. But the more time I spent in the studio, the more passionate I became about it, the more I understood the language, the more I got better as a player, as a producer, as eventually somebody who helped manage the studio. And so the passion, comes as a result of the development. I don't think it makes sense to get into something you hate. Well, just don't do that. If you
No.
hate it, then stop, right? Like, you don't have to hate everything. There's some people who think that, like, by definition, work is like something that you have to hate. And I'm just like, no, that's not the reality. But just start somewhere, find something that you think you could get into. And then, the question that I ask going back to, I don't know if you've seen any of the interviews that I've done with Adam McLaughlin yet, but he talks about getting really specific with your market, with your segment. And so let's just take the recording studio example real quick. I imagine if you're going to just serve recording studios in general, right? There are some studios who would maybe think that they weren't part of that, and others who would think they were part of that. But a lot of the bigger ones are probably already going to have a website relationship already. That, like, a lot of these studios have been around for 50, 60 years, the successful ones. And so there's not very many people who are in the middle, right? There's some successful recording studios, and then there's like some basement recording studios, and then the middle is a lot more sparse, right? And so I think in that situation, what I would do is go down to a segment of a segment and say, okay, well, let's say we're going to go to the music industry. We're going to go to the segment of recording studios. And then we're going to go to the segment of a segment of maybe basement recording studios. Now, that's probably a cheaper product, but there's a potential for scale because there are a lot of people who have what they would call a basement recording studio who would love to have a website to offer their services. And so maybe you've got I don't know, a $59 package, a $99 package, and a $129 package or something like that. And then you've got a template-based website and you go from there. So there's all these different ways to structure based on your industry to find the right market for you who would be, the right person for your services. So I think that's good. Any other thoughts on that?
You got it.
Got it. Cool. So let me ask you this because I wanted to go back to this. When you're doing the one to many thing, right? So you're starting to build influence. I'm going to ask two questions. One really specific question, and then one a little bit more general. Okay. So the specific question is, what's the call to action, right? You go on a podcast like this, is it pretty express the intent for you to hopefully get some business from that? And do you make that really clear in terms of how you close out those podcast interviews that you're interviewed on? That would be the specific question. And then the general question is, do you have any plans to, or have you already started thinking in terms of being an all-around solution provider for the network and for the niche? So in other words, versus just web design, do you have plans to offer any information products along those lines, or is it basically you're just going to do website design services?
What do you mean by information products?
Oh, so to what extent are you trying to be an authority on digital marketing
Oh.
for, is it just client work, or that kind of thing?
So first, the one to many. So Express Call, when I go on a podcast, I don't want it just to be a pitch of services. So when I go on, I really don't. I mean, we talk about, okay, what's the effective way to get reviews? How did I do it and go from like 0 to 89 Google reviews? And they just took down one. So 88 in like 2, 2.5 years. So how do we do that? What's the effective way to get a website? It's not like a pitch fest because then people are just going to go to another podcast. No one wants to hear
Sure.
that. So, okay, refix, say something.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you, and yeah, I
Oh,
would agree
okay.
that would be horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you don't want the way I go into it. Actually, I just started sponsoring. Right now, I sponsor four or five podcasts. And so, one of them I just started, we just recorded one. And he asked me at the beginning, he's like, oh, do you want me to say, and this is our new sponsor? And I said, you know, I wouldn't even say that. Just we'll talk about how we can help their business. And if that resonates with them at the end, we'll say how to, hey, you can connect or whatever. And obviously, there's a link in the bio. And that's what I found really drives leads because I do have ads on the podcast. But what I found is interviews convert 10 times better, or I don't know about the exact metric, but a lot better than just running an ad. Because I'll tell you what I do every time I get to an ad in a podcast. I look at my watch, I hit the 30 seconds 3 times, and I get back to the podcast.
Yeah, me
So,
too.
yeah. So I do advertise with them and it works. But the interviews is really what drives the sales. And I just try to help people in their business, even if they never use me. And that seems to, and also, let me just back up quickly with, I liked what you talked about, Jeff Bezos. He focused on two things, speed and cost. And so we try to make what we call a no-brainer offer to where you'd be dumb to say no to it. So literally our offer is $1 for the first month, and we guarantee to get it done 3 weeks or less from the projected start date, or it's free for a year. So think of that.
Whoa.
I remember when, that's the reason why I even started web design. I reached out to like 10 web designers. Two got back to me. One of them, I said, hey, this pricing on your website, this is exactly what I need. I'd like to move forward with it. And he said, oh, we don't offer that anymore. And I'm like, I was just on your website. What are you talking about? And he's like, oh, it's outdated. We got to change that. And it was so frustrating. I'm like, and then other people wanted thousands up front and then a huge recurring fee as a small business. And I'm just like, I can't afford that. So that's when I started. And the first one I built, it was pretty rough a couple of years ago, you know, just first time building it. But obviously you do it more, you improve, and now they're good and they're getting better every day. But it's just, anyway, you want to make that offer so good, someone can't say no.
So this is fascinating. Yeah, I love this. And this is another example of the kind of thing that that I can't do, right? Or at least I don't want to do because I don't have a niche offer with a template and a quick design process, right? I mean, we do, and I've been very upfront about this ever since the beginning. I've always done custom website designs, right? I've always done custom, so it's a little bit higher monthly fee. There's a guaranteed or there's a minimum contract length of 18 months, right? That's our model. Now, I'm not opposed to a more template-based model. In fact, the way that web design has been commoditized, I'm more and more open to it every day. And frankly, probably gonna start testing this in some different contexts as well. And so but I think it's fascinating that you have the ability to make offers like that that would be a lot more difficult for somebody like me, where okay, it takes 35 hours, 15 to 35 hours, depending on the complexity and the amount of pages and everything, to custom build a website. And I know that I'm not even going to recoup my money even at that for about the first 3 months. I'm okay with that because month 4 through 18, I have a contracted arrangement where I'm going to be making money, and I make my money on the back end. So I'm okay with that. But in your scenario, you're saying, yeah, we're only going to charge you a dollar for the first month. Now, do you have a, and I'm guessing you do, but you tell me, do you
There's
have a
no
minimum
contract.
contract? So there's no contract. So it's a dollar
I've
for the
had
first
some.
month, and they can technically just take that and go if they really wanted to.
They don't, you don't own the, after 12 months, you own the website. So they don't own the website until 12 months of the full payment, but they
Okay.
could cancel anytime. So I've had someone cancel after $1. Now that was very frustrating, but I'm like, hey, you know what? I'd rather that and him leave happy than him leave upset. And
Right.
so I ate the cost. That took me hours to design his website, but my whole thinking is long term. And so if I can keep people satisfied, and if I can sign up two or three extra people, or even one extra person a month because of my killer offer, then it's going to pay for any churn, which I don't have bad churn
Yeah.
because people are signing up, and long term, the money is going to make up for itself. So short term, it does
Yeah.
sting, and I have thought about it before. I'm like, man, maybe I should just have the same cost at the first month too. But then I'm like, okay, my acquisition rate is going to be a lot lower just because the only reason I do the $1 is to get, not to get, because that sounds like it's deceptive, but to have their payment method card on file. Because then, obviously, with their permission, you're not having to ask twice. Because if I had to ask when the second month rolled around, hey, can I have your card info? You're basically asking them, do you still want this or not? Rather than continuing on. And it's less friction. And so, otherwise, I would do free for the first month. But that
Yeah.
$1 allows me to, with their permission, have their payment info.
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like so just a little behind the scenes, right? So the one of the emails that you sent me recently, the subject line was twins. And I think it's obviously because we have so much in common, right? And so I'm putting that out there, but it's so funny in that context because I had a very similar idea. Like probably I want to say it was 6 months ago. I mean, it was before I ever knew who you were. I certainly hadn't talked to you before. I was talking to with my wife about it. And I never moved further with it, but I was like, what if we charged a dollar for the first month? And she's like, yeah, but so many people would leave after that dollar. And here's the thing that, and this is not anything against her. She just like, she doesn't live in this world. We do. This is one of another example of a subscription way of thinking that most web designers aren't thinking this way. And so it does take a mindset shift. Now, I'm not going to lie. The idea of somebody leaving after they've paid me a dollar, yeah, that scares the heck out of me. Like, of course it does. Like, it's not fun. But in subscription thinking, think about all the times that you've signed up for a 30 or 60 day trial, or you've paid a dollar for something and that the first month and then every month thereafter, it's $97 a month or something like that. There's a reason why they do that, right? The reason why they do that is because it works. Yes, there's a percentage of people who leave, but most often the percentage of people who stay is way higher. And because you get the initial acquisition and the cost, you get more at bats, you get more chances to serve those clients, right? And so that's what you're saying, is you're saying that, yeah, there might be some who leave after a buck, but the reality is most stay at that renewal rate, whatever it is, and it immediately becomes worth it.
And I'll just a little bit different there, but part of the reason why is they see the product as good. Part of those products that you're talking about, some of these online subscription things, like a phone, not a phone, but like a music player or whatever, Pandora or whatever. I mean, they have decent products, but I'm just saying some of them, it's not even about the product. It's just about getting you on there. But this is part of why my churn rate is almost zero, is because the product is good. And it does help their business. So, I know it's going to help. I can show them, hey, this is going to help. And that's why they're willing to keep on. Not just, I forget about the payment, because the prices that I charge are enough that they're probably not going to forget about it, a couple hundred bucks a month. So
Yeah.
the why they stay is because of the value.
So what's your best case for the because some people are all up in arms about templates. Oh, I don't want to do templates. There's a lot of people who get into web design because I think you do that. I mean, right, it's a template-based sort of model, right? And a lot of people talk about,
I would push back, because a
yeah.
template, that makes it sound like it's just a plug and play. We do use, I explain it this way, is in every good website, there's a skeleton, there's bones that every website needs. And I think obviously you need an effective homepage, you need an our story page, you need a service pages for a service-based business, you need a gallery, you need to contact us. And then from there, you customize it with copy, images, and color. So at that point, I think a template is the wrong word, because it leaves the wrong impression. Because we spend hours on every website. Right now, it's me. I spend hours on every website, and then we go through a revision process. So, I don't use that word, and I don't like to use that word, because that leaves the wrong impression in people's mind. And in our plan, we include the domain name cost, we include the hosting cost, we include unlimited edits, because now, there are some people that take a few more edits, but most people, it's months between edits. But that's just a peace of mind for them. So they don't feel like, if I send an edit, am I going to get a $1,500 bill? So it's just trying to make it so good that it's just irresistible. And as from what I've seen, I have not seen any offer even close to this.
Yeah. Okay, so this is fascinating. And so you'll just, and by the way, you'll have to tell me, Ezra, if you got a time crunch, you have to tell me when you have to go, because
No
otherwise
problem.
I'll just keep you here all day. Okay, so we don't want to call it a template. Okay, that's cool. I can respect that. So it's kind of like with me, I don't sell subscription web design, right? I don't sell that. I sell a managed website. But to web designers, I sell subscription web design, right? It that's what we're talking about, right? And so I think it's the difference in, and so I don't know if I can ask you this question and just say I don't want to answer that. That's fine. But I'm curious, when you say it takes hours to build a website, are we talking 4? Are we talking 10? Are we talking 25? I mean, how long are you spending on a website? That's kind of how I judge whether it's a customized template versus a custom website.
Yeah, it depends on what they want. I mean, the initial anywhere from 4 to, I don't know that I spent over 10, 12. I probably spent close to that on some. And then, man, I just spent an hour and a half doing edits with a guy on the phone yesterday. So, from start to finish, and there's some people that are pickier than others or want a lot more change, which is okay, but it totally varies.
But that's about what I would expect, right? Somewhere in that 4 to 10, somewhere in there, our like initial setup process and revisions. And then, of course, there's things that have to be done after that, but.
Yeah, you've got the hosting, you've got the domain name, you've got the edits on the back end. And then we also, in our middle plan, which is what most people use, we help optimize their Google Business profile. And that takes probably anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour to really flesh that out effectively. And then depends on the plan. We also have one that I don't know if you ever heard of something called Nice Job. It's something that's really good for review management. Basically, it helps automate gathering reviews, and it can link to a CRM or customer relationship manager. And so you can automate the sending of texts and also emails to get those reviews. And we've had some people that have gotten 20 to 30 reviews in a month or two, Google reviews.
We've taken kind of my shining example client on that is we use a service called Review Lead, but we've taken, gosh, we've taken this company from in a couple years that we've been working with them, and we've taken them from 35 reviews to almost 400 now. So it's like,
And the
it's
amount of
like
business they've got is probably in the hundreds of thousands from that, if they're closing
easily.
effectively.
Easily. Yes, it's wild, wild, wild. I mean, review and reputation management can really be like a huge results. This is a bad way to say it. Results shower, right? It's a good way to prove results from the work that you're doing. In many cases, even more than a website will. That can vary, but review and reputation management is very tangible. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay. So then what about pricing? And I don't know how specific you want to be. We love specifics, but you don't have to be specific. Well, but what are your thoughts on pricing, and how do you get there? How do you arrive at the right price? And
So our prices range anywhere from 247 per month to 1,398 per month. So obviously the service level varies a lot there on what you get. And then what we do get into with that larger package, that is that has SEO and pay-per-click management. So that kind of varies on that as far as
okay.
service level.
Yeah, I like that. Is there any magic to, how you came up with those prices? Did you just start throwing stuff at the wall to see what works, or?
It's so funny. When I started, I think I've iterated so many times. Like at one point I was thinking on like a one-page website for $29 per month. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll do a $69 per month. And then it just totally is varied. But then what I realized is you have to understand to value your time. And so I thought, and it just takes time and confidence, because I was in Josh Hall and who he is, I was in his group and he was helping me a little bit, and I raised my prices a little bit, and I got someone sign up on my highest one. Then I realized, okay, if I'm going to pay people to help me market, if I'm going to market effectively, I'm going to have to raise my prices to increase for that as well. And then as you get leads, you get the confidence to realize, hey, people want this. And when I raised my prices, people didn't leave. And so that's all part of kind of learning your business value and perceived value. I just saw on Reddit the other day, someone was talking about subscription web design. I'm not a big Reddit person, but they were like, I'm going to start a web design business and charge $30 per month. And someone else was like, yeah, and sell you $30 per month, I wouldn't hire you because it would seem cheap. So price also indicates value, whether it's perceived or true value or not. I mean, I'm for providing value for what you do, but price is a signal for what you get, and you need to keep that in mind.
Oh, that's a really, really good point. Do you think that you're, I feel like I'm asking you some really intense questions here. So I again, you could decline to answer anything, but do you feel that your current pricing would have to go up if you were to look at starting to scale a team, or do you think there's enough margin there for you to be able to start scaling a team and keep your prices relatively similar for a while if you wanted
I
to?
very I it, with the if, with the customer base, I could keep my prices and scale.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, that's great
Now,
to hear that. Go ahead.
because with long term, because I don't know if it's going to work out, but I was just talking to, because this is what I try to, with the selling one to many, I reach out to people who have an audience, and I say, how can I serve your audience? And then I do a basically like affiliate program, giving them anywhere from 10 to 25% of the gross profit. So I make it worth their time. So they're incentivized. And then I do that on a monthly basis as well. So I love sending them money. And you say, wow, why? Because I realize when I'm sending it to them, I'm building trust, I'm building a bond, I'm building a relationship, and I'm encouraging them to send more people my way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's another thing that I've been meaning to put together in my business for a while now is a good affiliate relationship program. But again, it's hard to do when everything you're doing is custom and there's not like a specific niche audience, right? It's really, really difficult. And only in the last couple of months have I actually gotten my, honestly, the last month or so, have I gotten my businesses broken out. A lot of my audience knows that I've been in the process of breaking out my one agency into essentially two so that I could split off and start doing niche marketing to my membership sites, people. And so until now, it's been very, very difficult to actually, to sell in a way that's effective like that with referral programs, affiliate programs, one to many marketing. Because if you're just a generic web design agency, you're one in a sea of millions, and it's really hard to stand out. And that's why the price races to the bottom, because everybody thinks they're going to stand out by offering just a cheaper priced version of what somebody else offers. And boy, that's no way to run a business.
And that's why I think telling a story and having one is so important, and just having your own, because there's one affiliate I can think of who's very well off. He doesn't need the little bit of money I sent him for what he sends over. But I had a podcast with him. I think he resonated with my story, what I'm doing, and he took me on as a sponsor. And I was telling some the other day, it's not the money I'm sending him. And to be honest, I'm still a little flabbergasted that he is. I'm thankful, but
Yeah.
it's not what I'm sending him. And so having a niche, and whether or not you've worked in that field makes a big difference, because you know what? You never know where life's going to take you. Like, I never would have thought 2 years ago I would have been doing web design. And I originally went on podcast just to tell my story of the lawn care company, how I got the reviews, how it was leading to increased work, and how it could help other people, with no thought of selling anything.
Man, this is so cool. This is so great. I'm really big on the idea of story selling. And so maybe to circle back to the earlier conversation we were having. So I sell everything with a story, right? And I teach this in my courses, in my programs. I teach the idea of whatever you're doing when you're in a sales conversation, link, if you can link it up to a story, it will make so much more sense. So when I'm selling somebody on the concept of a managed website, I often tell what I call my pastor porn story, right? And the short version is, built a website back in the day, charged $500 for the keys, didn't charge anything for maintenance or updates or anything at all. They never touched the website, and a few months later, it had been blacklisted by Google and was redirecting to a porn site. And so the site was built for a church, right? And so it's like, that's not a good look. And so I decided then and there, when I went out and set out on my own to build my own agency up, I said, I'm going to fix that. And so I decided to start pricing via this different model. Well, If I had started that whole conversation with, yeah, we don't charge monthly, and we charge monthly instead of these one-time fees, because I like being paid monthly, right? It's like, okay, well, that's not really, that's not a good idea. And I think I would likely at least think of a way to go, to frame it as a client benefit, but all the better if I can share a concrete story of the consequences of not going this way that led me to start going this way. So I try to frame everything in a story. And the same is true with whatever you're going to pick as your niche. Man, find a niche where you've got a story you can tell. You've got an epic story. And fortunately, your story comes with numbers and everything, which is really great, right? And it happened that way, but you also intentionally tell it that way. I went from 0 to 88 reviews or whatever, right? Like you intend, like, yeah. It happened that way. We're both Bible guys. I'm a huge Bible nerd. And so I'm a big fan of the literal and the literary. When you look at the Bible, you have a literal thing that happened, but you also have the way the story is told. The way the story is told, yes, it's what actually happened, but it's also told in a certain way to make you feel something and to connect to other places in the Bible. That's how the biblical writers wrote. And so the same thing is true here. Like that pastor porn story, yeah, it happened that way, but I'm making sure to accentuate the parts of that story that make the most sense to get the point across. If I were to start a web design business for recording studios, I have an entire story that I could go tell my story of starting out in a recording studio and the first time, like I'll be able to identify because I could tell the story about the first time I ever set foot in a recording studio and how many people listening to that podcast identify with that feeling. They're thinking, oh man, he's a guy who's had that feeling too. That's somebody I could relate to, right? And so anytime you can frame a story, it shows not only your expertise and your influence, but your passion and your affinity with one another.
And here's two good examples. One, when I was in painting, I sold a $24,000 painting job. I don't think I had any competition. I don't think anyone else was quoting the job or in mowing. When I first started, I was doing this. Man, he should have been baling this yard I was mowing. It was so bad. And if you've ever been around farming, there's those metal T posts that you drive into the ground. The grass was like a couple of feet tall, and I was mowing this, and I ran over that T
Whoa.
post, and it messed my blade up. And so, in that, I learned, you don't, and I can tell that story and say, hey, you want customers coming to you, and you want enough customers coming that you can turn those down, and you want to be able to pre-sell your customers. So that it's not about when can you start. It's not about how much does it cost. It's about when can you start.
Yeah, there you go, right? So finding a story to map to any point that you want to make that comes from your past experience. And yeah, you can do this as a generalist, but boy, how much more powerful if you're telling a
Oh, yeah.
story that specifically connects to an affinity group, so that's huge. So all right, so we need to start wrapping up. This has been great. I cannot imagine that we will not have you back at some point. Like you should definitely come back at some point. This has been fantastic. I want to ask you it's kind of a double question as we begin to wrap up here. The first version of it is a question that I hate being asked, so I'm going to try to wrap it up into a better second version so you get the point, okay? So the question really is, what do you want to say? What's on your mind that I haven't asked you, right? But I hate being asked that question personally. So maybe think about it like this. What are some of the biggest lessons learned in doing this? Maybe, I don't know, top one to three, just lessons learned or life experience gained that you think would be something really helpful for this audience.
First, read, and then second, read Seth Godin's book, The Purple Cow.
Purple
And I can
Cow.
summarize it. Have you ever read that one?
So, believe it or not, I own it, have not read it yet. Get the point, but would like to get the
Oh.
details as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He has a bunch of good stories in there. I'll just summarize it quickly. He and his family are driving in Europe. They're looking out, beautiful green hills, cows grazing. And they're oohing and aahing, enjoying the scenery. 30 minutes later, bored stiff, not noticing the same beautiful scenery. And he thinks to himself, what if there was a purple cow right in the middle? Not only would they notice, but they would tell people about it. And you want to be that purple cow in your business, whatever that is, even if you're the local web designer, which I would recommend be more than that, but you need to be a purple cow in wherever you are.
It's a fantastic lesson. Yep. I have just started working with a new student who, like, if I were to just summarize it based on the context of this conversation, her thing is helping other people identify what their purple cow is, right? That thing that gets you, that makes you different from everybody else. And that's a great way to make concrete, really, a business truism of days gone by, which is the idea of the unique selling proposition, right? Something that makes you unique, but that sounds really stuffy, right? I mean, it's true and it's important, but it's really stuffy. And if I read one more Twitter bio that says, "I help blank do blank," I think I'm just gonna like rip my hair out. I'm just like, okay, I know you just took that course. I know they told you to put it in your Twitter bio, but you sound like a robot. And so the purple cow imagery, I think, is very helpful. It helps you think, man, how could I really stand out? Am I so obvious in the way that I stand out as an option or as the player in this space? Am I so obvious as a purple cow in the countryside would be? And so I think that's the lesson. Would you agree?
Yeah. And then another thing I'd say is go to mymetalbusinesscards.com. It's not an affiliate. I just buy them and they're really good. And you can literally buy metal business cards. Now they are pricey, probably $4 to $5 a piece. But literally every time I hand these to people, they look at them like, where did you get these? And they don't throw them out. And they're amazing. And I'd show you about the backgrounds on it. You won't be able to see it. But I have one right here. And they're just a great tool, and I'd recommend them.
A metal business card. Wow, that sounds
Yeah.
really fascinating. Okay, very good. Well, my friend, I certainly appreciate this time together. It's been great. Is there anywhere, I mean, can people connect with you online? I know you don't have anything to sell, but thank you, by the way, for coming on without even having anything to sell. I think that speaks a lot to your character and who you are. It's amazing. But how can we, connect with you if we want to, or can we?
Sure. You can just go to greenfrogwebdesign.com. And if you're like me and you struggle with spelling at times, you can just type in ilovemyfrog.com and that'll take you there as well.
Love it. Love it. So good. That's a purple cow right there. I love my
Yeah.
frog.com. Amazing. Okay, my friend. Thanks again for providing value to my audience. I very deeply appreciate it. And we'll talk later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Hey there, it's Steve, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the show. One of the biggest questions that I get is, okay, Steve, I'm excited. I love this idea of subscription web design, but I have no clue where to get started. If that's you, go to subscriptionwebdesign.com right now, enter your best email address, and I'm going to send you an exclusive training that I did on the five models of subscription web design that will show you the options that are available to you and give you some things to think about on how to get started. And for a limited time, I'm going to include my contract template for subscription web design. I've been asked multiple times to provide this template, and it's usually only available to my paying students. It's a $100 value, but it's yours free. Just go to subscriptionwebdesign.com and enter your best email address there, and I'll send those right to you, as well as send you daily email tips from the trenches of running my agency. See you over there at subscriptionwebdesign.com.